Welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast, where we are embracing the journey. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. There's a moment many women reach, often quietly, when they realize that experience doesn't automatically translate into confidence, visibility, or permission. We may know more than we ever have, yet hesitate to claim it, charge for it, or be seen at the level we've earned. Today's conversation is about closing that gap. My guest has spent years working inside large corporations, building expertise, judgment, credibility, and then made the intentional choice to step outside those structures without leaving her experience behind. What followed wasn't a dramatic reinvention, but a steady process of learning how to trust herself, listen differently, and show up without waiting to feel completely ready. We talk about why intuition often gets louder as women get older. Why visibility matters more than confidence, and how small experiments can create momentum when certainty feels out of reach. We also explore what women often have to unlearn after long careers, and why recognizing the value of what you already bring may be the most radical step of all. If you're questioning what's next, but not questioning your intelligence or capability, this conversation will meet you right where you are. Listen now to my conversation with Monica Rivera. Somewhere along the way, many women reach a quiet realization. The path that once made sense doesn't quite fit anymore. Not because we failed, but because we grew. My guest today understands that moment deeply. After a long and successful corporate career, she didn't start over. She translated decades of experience in judgment, intuition, and skill into work that finally felt aligned, purposeful, and sustainable. Along the way, she uncovered something many women struggle with. We often underestimate the value of everything we've already lived and learned. Today, she's a keynote speaker and communication strategist who's spoken at more than 100 organizations, including TEDx, Time Magazine, and the New York Times. But at the heart of her work is something much more personal, helping women stop shrinking their experience and start owning it. Monica Rivera, welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast, where we are embracing the journey.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here with you and be able to just share with your community. So thank you again for having me.
Yeah, no, when your note came in at Podmatch, I'm going like, oh yeah, I like this. So this, I'm looking forward to this. Now, many women are standing in that in-between space. It no longer fits, but what's next isn't fully clear. Two questions. What did that look like for you? And what do you say to women in that place now?
Oh, these are my favorite things to talk about. So for me, I had
Okay,
a
good.
corporate career working in marketing, and I really enjoyed it up until a point, and I like to sort of paint out the timeline. At first, I started my career, and most people really excited, invigorated, stretched creatively, working with some really great people. And then I started to move in different organizations, and as I dabbled into different industries, you start to learn that there's different personalities in each organization. And I arrived at one specific company, and it was different. It felt closed, the culture. I usually am able to penetrate and make friends and just find a way through. And it was a little bit more challenging than it had been before. It was an organization where it was very male-dominated industry, male-dominated organization. We didn't have a lot of things in common. And so I'd watch soccer on the weekends to try to have conversations about that. And everything that I tried to do, it felt as if I wasn't able to get through. But the work was something that I still enjoyed. But then after time, I started to get just that little bit of whisper that so many of us get, thinking, is there something else? What would that look like? And so I started to interview at other organizations. And I remember so clearly, Agnes, I was in this interview, and this woman was sitting in front of this huge, tall, floor-to-ceiling window. And as she was speaking to me, I was looking over her shoulder thinking, it's such a beautiful day outside. And I remember I'm not connected to this. And so I knew that it wasn't just about the work. It felt as if I wanted something more than just that. I wanted to make my own decisions and feel what it would be like, honestly, to try my hand at these other interests and hobbies that I dabbled in but hadn't really explored before. And so the final piece came when a friend of mine called, and at the time I was working hybrid. So she called my cell phone. And as soon as I said hello, she said, "Oh my gosh, I didn't realize you were in the office." And I said, "Well, how did you know?" And she said, "Your voice sounds disconnected from your body when you're in the office." And I thought, wow, I didn't think anybody noticed. And at that point, I needed to make some real decisions. And then the card question is, what do you choose? You have all of this experience and you do have these interests, but it feels also when you've worked so many years in one specific role. I don't know if I believe jump in the net will appear. And so I didn't know what that was going to be. But eventually, after a lot of TED Talks and reading books and listening to podcasts, I said, you know what? I'm going to use my marketing experience. And what we do as marketers is experiment. And I'm going to experiment by just trying the one thing, knowing that if I don't like this one thing, then I can pick something else from my list. And so that's really what I did. And so that's what I would encourage all of your listeners who are in this same place, this crossroads of deciding which way they want to go, is make the list of the things that you would want to do, that you've considered, that you've thought, what would it look like if I just tried this? And then the one that lights you up the most, just try that first and give yourself a window. Could be 60 days, could be 90 days, and see what it feels like to move into that direction, knowing that if you don't like it, you can go to the next thing on your list.
Is this something a woman would do by herself? Because I've also heard the coaching of like talk to your friends. Because sometimes a friend will say, "Oh my God, are you seriously asking me this when I see you do whatever like every week or in this environment you always do this?" And it's like, "Oh, I do." And it's sort of this curiosity for the person, but then it's like, "Oh, yeah, well I kind of like doing that."
Do you know what's interesting? So, the name of my company is You Want to Do What? Because it is that question that I asked myself when I thought, why would you want to disrupt a corporate career? There's nothing really wrong with it. And that question kept coming up. You want to do what? You want to go out on your own and try something differently. And I will say for me, I think that we always know the answer inside of ourselves. And often when we're asking our friends, as well-intentioned as they are, we're looking for maybe some validation to see is our idea okay? But what I find is that when the answer comes from someone else, specifically when it's a big thing of what should I do next, I really think that we already know what it is. And that's why I'm a big proponent of actually getting quiet. All of the big decisions I've ever made in life is when I've actually taken a step back, I've gotten quiet, and I've not done anything, but just simply listened. And the way that I is the barometer for myself, and maybe this might be worth offering to you, is that if the thing keeps popping back up, whether it's the goal, it's the new job, it's the hobby I want to try, it's even the place when I was thinking about where I was going to live next, there's usually a beat that will continue to drum. And if I listen to that and know that it's coming up and I'm not forgetting about it, then that is how I choose to follow it. But I think that knowing can really only come from yourself. And also, it's so rewarding when you decide to make that decision, because if we borrow someone else's idea and it doesn't work, there's the thought of, I knew I shouldn't have listened. But really, I think it feels so much better to listen to ourselves and then either have the success or the lesson based off of that.
I just want to say briefly that your company name is You Want to Do What? When I read that, I read it as You Want to Do What? Because sometimes, like stuff that you know, your friends are going to say, You want to do what?
Absolutely. And that is the question that we have of ourselves that other people will ask of us. Our spouses, our partners, our friends, our community will have that same question. And but no one asked it more than honestly, I asked myself while I was working myself on that journey of figuring out what that was going to be.
Do you ever find that dealing with women, you know, we are, and I'm especially this generation, our boomer generation, listeners, I'm talking about me, not Monica, is We've spent so many years being, a daughter, and now we're back being a daughter because we're caregiving parents. We were wives, we were mothers, we were employees. Even if we had careers, we defined ourselves by that. Sometimes it's really hard to separate the outer us from the inner us.
Absolutely.
What do you say to that?
So interestingly, when I do deliver talks, what I find most often are there's two groups of women that want to pull me to the side at the end of the conversation. And it's those that are 0 through 5. So they maybe just entered the workforce and they're thinking, I didn't know what I was getting myself into and I need a little bit of guidance. But then it's also women that have been 20 or 25 years already into their career and they also feel that they're at a very similar space. And so I deeply understand this because as women, we have so many identities. I like to call it lots of commas after our name. There's not just one thing, but there's all of these commas of all the different roles that we play. And so it can be very challenging to feel who are we outside of these pieces? And when, especially when the external wants so much of us, and there are people who rely on us and we nurture and we caregive for. And then there's the expectations of if we're still working and what those roles are going to look like, and everything feels as if it's coming at us, that where do we actually exist within this space? And that truly is one of the most challenging things. I know for me personally, and I don't think this is even a generational thing, but I also struggle with a lot of guilt of saying no to people, of not always being present for example, my niece, she's 8 years old. I adore her. If it was up to her, we would spend every moment of the day together. She asked if I could live with her. Even that question alone, there's so much guilt, honestly, that I feel to not say, absolutely, I'll sell my place and go sleep in a twin bed next to you in your small room. But I feel that all of the time from when I travel, where I have a speaking engagement, I'm going to be away. There's really a lot of that where it's the constant battle of, do I say yes to her? Do I keep going forward with my career? And so I deeply resonate with that. I think that it's about giving us a little bit of space. So it's not a 180 that we're going to go from being that caregiver to everyone else and then completely turning a switch into becoming someone who's all for ourselves. But I think it is about finding just a little bit of separation and finding if there's one day a week, one moment in a week that we can start to give to ourselves just a little bit. To me, that really is the game changer. And I'll tell you this. It started when I just made time to read. I love reading, but I found that the books would pile up and I was never getting to them. I was so exhausted at the end of the day. And I said, you know what? 15 minutes. I'm going to try 15 minutes to get back to it. And even that little bit of space reminded me of it feels good to do things that you really enjoy. And so sometimes we think it's the big leaps that have to happen, but I think it's in those small moments that we start to reconnect with ourselves. So whatever that small thing is for you, I would encourage you just start with the 15 minutes and see how that feels. And I think you're going to want a little bit more of it after that.
Yeah, that's interesting because I know when I look at my own self now that I have left the 9 to 5, it's if I get into something that I am just loving, it's like, oh my goodness, it's the wee hours. I have got to go to bed. It's
Yes.
just because it's so consuming when you're doing something that you absolutely love doing. Yeah. Now,
Absolutely.
you've said this wasn't about starting over, but about sort of translating what you already knew.
Yeah.
How did you manage to see your experience differently? And how did you trust what you were deciding?
Trust is the biggest one. That was probably the hardest piece. I will say I was very clear. So writing is a big thing for me. So I like to really I do what I call a thought download where I just write down all of the things that I'm thinking, dump it all out onto the page. And I realized I wasn't going to lose any of my expertise, that I could bring it with me. And there's so many things that I've learned for me in my corporate career that I could apply to other places. So if I think about it now, I was delivering talks in a corporate role, but it was under a corporate masthead, but I still knew the art of communication and to connect through storytelling. So how could I apply that in the next thing that I was going to do? I've always loved learning, so maybe I'm no longer learning about a product or solution that the company offers, but I can still apply that skill set into how can I develop something new that's in my own acumen that's going to help me move forward. So I really started to just look very plainly at what is the expertise I already had, and is there a way to apply this in a different area, even if it's something completely opposite of what I was doing. There's so many connection points that do find a way into hobbies and interests and other side projects. So that was the more tactical piece. The self-trust piece, I gamified it for myself, to be quite honest. So I don't know if you use a Fitbit or an Apple Watch, but we have all of these games that people play all the time of how many steps am I going to take? What's my sleep score? So there's all these different things. And I said, what if I gamified it for myself? And so back in 2017, I think it was, I started the podcast and I didn't know anything about starting a podcast other than I had been a listener for a very long time. So I Googled how to start a podcast. And in 3 days, I had made some cover art that wasn't very good. And I recorded my first episode that was even worse than the cover art. But I told myself, Agnes, the only thing I want to do is just commit to showing up every week. I'm not going to think that it has to be perfect. I'm not going to beat myself up over the fact that it sounds horrendous and I don't really know what's this humming in the back. I later found out that was the fan and the microphone was picking that up, but all of these things that I didn't realize at the time. But it was just about showing up every week because I knew if I committed to that practice of once a week, I would start to improve incrementally. And then I would say, who can I talk to about the humming? And then I talked to people who were smarter than I was and said, this is what it sounds like, or it sounds tinny. And I would explain it. And people were very gracious because I embraced that beginner mindset, but also took everything of my expertise when it came to marketing and said, well, I can figure out how to market it. But how do I get it to sound good? I'm going to embrace that mindset. I'm going to connect with other people. And it was just that act of self-trust 1 week at a time. And then it improved.
I'm going to ask you a question that I'm asking it in such a way because I know what my answer is, and I'm sure you're going to have the same answer. Is it for anybody who's going, oh, I don't know how to do this, or I don't know how to that, or oh, I couldn't possibly, start a podcast that with, there's this humming, and I wouldn't know what to do. It would drive me crazy. No matter what you start doing, I don't know about you. Maybe you did. I do not have in the first couple of weeks 1,000 downloads.
Oh my gosh,
You know,
no.
if you have an idea, you're not going to get the multi-million dollar contract in the first month. You have that runway to improve, learn more, all that sort of stuff. Like, you don't have to hit the ground running in terms of being perfect.
Absolutely. And to echo that, I did not tell a single soul that I had a podcast for the first 4 weeks. Because again, I was just trying to get the reps in for myself, still see again, is this something I'm going to want to continue doing? Because I didn't want to announce it to friends and family and my community and then say, oh, I've given up on the idea. So I kept it again just to myself to see. And I clearly remember telling my family it was a pizza night. And I said, so I started a podcast. And they put their pizza down. I remember they all turned towards me and said, what? I said, yeah, 4 weeks ago. And so very, very meekly. And they said, well, where is it? I said, everywhere you can hear podcasts. And they immediately grabbed their phones and downloaded and were so supportive about it. And then just pummeled me with questions about when did you start? How long had you been thinking about it? But it was really something for myself, as I mentioned. And then even before I interviewed my first guest, I took about 6 months just to get comfortable behind the microphone, to get comfortable with editing, because I wanted to know the one of the most precious things someone can give us is their time. And I wanted to treat that with care. And if I didn't know how to edit an episode or make sure that I even had the right settings on the laptop and all of those things, I wanted to make sure I had that down. So I was overly cautious before I did that. But I gave myself a lot of patience. And then over time, it grew. And podcasting, as you know, is one of the most remarkable things that we can do. It's a space where we can talk about anything or everything we want, and our community somehow finds us. And that's a really beautiful gift. So I'm very grateful that I started with podcasting.
And if I can give you one tip, only
Yes,
because
please.
this literally, no, this literally happened in the last few weeks because of time zones. It was between, we talked between 5 and 6 a.m. her time, 9 and 10 p.m. my time. I
Oof.
have never had to do so much editing in my life because we were both a little, just tired and not thinking straight. And we were like, So I'm editing the episode, just laughing my head off because I'm thinking, never again, never again.
It's funny, I also interviewed someone who was in Europe at the time. And so there was some time difference between us. She was also very nervous, had never been on a podcast before. And I say, Agnes, she probably had a minimum of 200 during the episode. And I tried, but as you know, it's hard to clean up all of those to the point that I did my best. And when she listened to the episode, she said, "I can't believe how often I say And I thought to myself, if you only knew how often you really say you'd definitely feel, so she felt terribly about it, but there was a lot of that I cleaned up that she'll never know about.
Well, and if all of our listeners would do us a favor, plug in your ears for a moment. That is the one thing that I cannot move past is if I'm thinking, instead of just keeping my mouth shut, I will lead with, and even in our conversation today, now you're going to notice it, but when this goes to air, some of them will be gone. So, okay, so skills. Is there a skill that you might have dismissed? Because it was easy, it just wasn't didn't seem that important, but later turned into an asset.
That's a great question. I don't know if there's a skill that I necessarily dismiss, but there was one that was really challenging for me that I didn't think would have been challenging. So again, I have a marketing background. I've worked in a bunch of different companies, which have been fantastic. However, when I was thinking of my messaging for the show, I really struggled with my messaging. And again, as a marketer, it is extremely frustrating to not be able to market yourself at the time. And there was a period for about 3 months, which, if you and I had gone to an event together and you were trailing behind me, every time I talked to someone, I would have a different way of introducing myself. You would have thought, what in the world? Who is this person? What does she actually do? Because I kept trying on different ways that I was explaining the podcast, different ways of explaining what it was that I did. And that part, I was looking for cues where people would lean in and have some interest and ask a follow-up question. Other times where it looked as if I completely lost them through my explanation. And so I did a lot of testing, but I really struggled in the beginning of how do I market myself, which felt so foreign because I'd spent so many years marketing other people's things. And so that was the piece that I definitely struggled with the most. I will say the asset that I had was the storytelling piece. So I've always loved story, even from a child. I've read books and I loved watching shows and being in New York City, being able to go to Broadway when we could afford it. So that was always a big piece for me. And I leveraged it so much. Even as I thought about constructing a podcast episode and the amount of editing I did, I tried to think of, okay, what is the cohesive story arc that we have here? And so it was a lot more hours to do that, but I took some of that with me into podcasting and then eventually into the work that I do now, which is to help support women with their expertise and how can they tell their story in a way that people listen.
And I think if you think about almost anything that you need to learn, if you're given the facts, if you're given the instructions, all that sort of stuff, it's like, okay, and your brain's trying to handle that. As soon as you have story, a
Yes.
storyline, like however that is, it's like, oh, it sort of all falls into place, makes sense. And also you're engrossed in the story as well, so it's like, oh,
Absolutely.
okay. So story is
Absolutely.
amazing.
And especially, I tell people the three things I always think about specifically, whether it's a story you're going to tell in 60 seconds or 60 minutes, is what do you want someone to know? What do you want someone to do? And what do you want someone to feel? And to me, the feeling piece is really important. I think that it just completely changes the way that you communicate a message when you're thinking, what is the feeling you want someone who's listening to you to have? And so I encourage other people to really think about that, whether it's my clients or myself. I start out before I write anything, answering those three questions for myself. Those become my North Star, and then I go from there.
Do you have that Maya Angelou quote on your wall?
I do not know. I don't, but it's a beautiful quote. Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So you started out by talking about a corporate environment. The question I didn't ask because we sort of moved on was, what was the word you used? The, not the personality, but I guess the character of a corporation. There's the people and there's the actual corporation. Now, I know they bounce off of each other to a certain extent. If you're not necessarily getting along with the people, oh, the culture. I'm sorry. There we go. Corporate culture. And then the people that are operating within their own little cultural bubble, whatever that, whether it's like a male-dominated thing or whatever. I didn't just say, how does that bounce off of each other, first of all? But because I sometimes do lose my train of thought, is I want you to go from there to explaining how you went from that corporate environment. What did you have to unlearn to create your own personal bubble slash environment slash culture?
Oh my gosh, the unlearning is, I don't think people talk about it enough. And it goes back to the identity piece, which we touched on earlier, of in the sense of who are we responsible for? Who do we take care of? But the identity of your job, separate from who you are, that is something I really had to unlearn because who was I if I didn't work for these big companies? And I didn't realize at the time how enmeshed those two things were for me. Also, in how I showed up and introduced myself, there was that struggle in the beginning of, well, don't I lead with the big corporate name because that's the name that people know? And so you have this attachment, and society says, well, if you have this big name, somehow your status is elevated. And I realized, well, none of that ever really mattered to me to begin with. But that shift of having to go from this is who I am as a business person versus who I was in this other identity. And then being able to let that go, that I dropped it and I didn't have to talk about what I did once before. So I will say that is one of the pieces, and learning who I was away from the corporate entity. The other piece is in my communication, funnily enough, I wrote very formally. And I would receive feedback of, wow, these emails that you send, they're so structured and rigid. And again, it was the corporate mindset that I had. I wasn't writing in a more human tone, I guess you could say, because so much of corporate communication, especially when you're writing emails, documentation is everything, making sure all of the details are accounted for. And so you're just looking at it from a completely different lens. And quite honestly, sometimes in a business standpoint, there's a little CYA. You want to cover your butt and make sure everything is there. However, when I'm communicating with you or with the client, there's the ability to have a little bit more space, to have a little bit more warmth in the tone. And so those were some of the things where I had to realize, oh, I'm still showing up in the same way. Who am I outside of that? And so there's a little bit of unlearning and also relearning who you are outside of that corporate identity. And so those two things took a while. But then once it happens, if you give yourself the grace of knowing you're in this process of reemerging in a different way, it really is beautiful when one day you stop thinking about what was and you're really excited for what will be.
Okay, you've just given me the perfect segue into what I want to ask you next. But before we go there, I identify with that because the number of people who would read something that I'd written and they'd say, like, you don't speak this way. Like, you don't talk to us this way. Something as simple as apostrophe S or apostrophe LL, you know, that sort of thing. That's how we talk. But it's not always how we write. But there's got to be that congruency to.
Absolutely. I admire people who are able to write in the same way that they speak with such an ease, because it's a different practice. And I can tell almost who worked in corporate and who didn't work in corporate sometimes by the ease in which they're able to have that singular personality, if you will, that represents in both places exactly the same. I can almost
Oh,
identify
isn't that funny? Well, I'm 10 years along now, so I really hope I've improved. Okay, now you said I had said something about the segue. What did you take from your corporate background, like from your previous careers, and what now is tied directly to your experience and intuition?
The thing that I probably took that's most important, because there are many things that I was able to take with me, because as I mentioned, you do bring it all with you to the next space. However, what I think helped the most, particularly in starting my own business, was the idea of everything has a solution. So when you're working for a company and an organization, it's almost impossible to go to your manager, whoever you report to, with a problem and not some idea of what a potential solution could be. It doesn't always have to be that the solution is going to be right, but they want you to have something. So it's easy, at least for me, in the beginning to say, well, I don't know how to do this, or I'm stuck. And that's often what I hear a lot of clients say, I'm stuck. They'll say, I don't know. And I don't know usually is a buffer for, I might not want to think about this too deeply. I might feel uncomfortable with the feelings that are coming up trying to answer this question. But that is what I brought with me, this idea of everything has a solution. And that helped me embrace some of those struggles when I was going into my next thing to say, this is an opportunity to problem solve. I'm not going to always get it right, but let's just make a list of what are some solutions it could look like. Maybe it's a person you can ask for help. Maybe it's a resource you haven't thought about before, but there can be more creative solutions. And that is what I brought with me, this idea of you can't just bring a problem and not also think about some solutions.
Sort of like our pre-talk,
Yes,
where you were
absolutely.
offering solutions for me. That's great.
Yes.
How do you separate? And maybe once again, I'm giving out more about me than I should be. How do you separate where you are now with your career and being able to find the solutions, or knowing it's out there, you just have to find it, and on a more personal level, not always solve everybody's issues?
Oh, I wish I had a good answer for you, because I continue to try to solve everyone
Thank you.
else's problems for sure. That is definitely a challenge. The best advice I'd ever received is you have to let other people make their own mistakes. That is deeply difficult for me to do, because with experience and wisdom and the perspective of being outside of a problem, you can often see the wall someone might be racing towards. And it's hard to me not to try to put myself in front of them and that wall. So it depends. It depends on the severity of it. I will say that I probably have to get better at this, not interfering quite as much. I tend to do it truly to those that are only in my circle, and then less so for other people because they don't know me as well. And so I also don't want people to misconstrue where my heart is. And also trying to help with solutions. So I have to try to temper myself when it comes to those things. But I'm still a work in progress. And I hope, I think also truly, when someone is willing to help you, I find it to be a really beautiful and blessed thing. People don't have to help one another. And so I'm deeply grateful when someone wants to help me or support me in any way. And to me, it's just in my nature to want to do the same thing. And I also hope that someone will say, hey, you're a little too much here. I don't quite need the support. And I also will be okay with that. But I also don't want to change the nature of who I am, which is to try to be helpful and to try to be a servant leader in that way. So it's about finding that balance. And hopefully, people will let me know if I'm doing too much on that particular
Yeah.
day.
Yeah, I find myself, if someone has an issue, of saying, have they actually asked me to help them or not? Because my first reaction is still hand on the mouse. I can figure this one out. And it's like, no, they just want to talk about it. They're not asking for your help. And so, yeah, it is a really tough one when you're used to being the problem solver, the person to find the answers.
If I may offer, I had a friend that I grew up with. She and I were best friends through elementary school, high school, college, and she would travel quite a bit. And she always wanted a ride, either to the airport or from the airport. But Agnes, she would never ask for help. She would say, "Oh, my flight's going to get in at 11:15. Wow, it's going to be a bit late," and pause so that you could offer. And I remember thinking, we have been friends since we were little kids, and she can still not find a way to just ask for the ride. I've picked her up a gazillion times from the airport at this point, but she struggled to ask. So there are times where I also think maybe not everyone is also as comfortable with putting the ask out there. Because if this woman, who I've known since we were 6 years old, can't ask for the airport, then I also think there may be other people who feel the same way. So that's why sometimes I do just offer the help. And if they want to say no, then they can.
What would we do if we didn't all have different personalities, eh? That's hilarious.
Absolutely.
Now, I had asked you about experience and intuition. I'm not sure if you exactly went there, but is there a difference? Like, or does one come from the other? How does that work?
If I had to categorize it, I would think experience is more from the head and intuition is more from the heart and the gut. And finding the balance of what you listen to when is really a matter of discernment. And I also think it's how practiced you are. For a long time, I lived, I call it neck up in my head. Everything, if it was strategy and weighing out pros and cons, and I'm very analytically minded. But there are decisions that come more from that inner knowing, which earlier on in our conversation, you'd ask, what about asking a friend? And I said, I think it's better to be still and listen to that answer within. That answer has only come through time, because again, everything was a pro cons list. Everything was, what's the percentage of success, the probability of success on this option versus the other option? And I realized that you can weigh all of that, but there's never going to be a 100% certainty in anything. But what I can do is feel good about it in my body. And I think that's where the intuition comes from. Oftentimes, even with the best set of data, you can still feel, I don't know if I want to take that way home today, or I think I'm going to decline this invitation. And it's just something that comes from inside. So I've learned, especially as I've gotten older, to rely on that discernment internally and not make everything an analytical and logical decision, but also trust in my wisdom and inner knowing as a woman and be okay with the answer just simply coming from that and not from a data set that exists somewhere else.
Okay, your magic words, as a woman, because throughout our conversation so far, I've had that thought a few times of what we're talking about can be a very female-oriented quality. And I guess part of what I'm going to ask you is, do you work strictly with women? And you and I both have what are often described as male traits, which is, I can find the answer.
Yes.
Talk to me about that.
For sure. So I don't only work with women. I will say the majority of my clients have been women, but I do have men that have worked with me that have sometimes been some of my best clients as well. They're very keen on, I have this problem, help me solve it. And so that can go really well. They just say, send me in a direction, tell me what to do, coach, and I will go do it. And so that can be sometimes fun to see those results come sometimes a lot faster as a result. But I would say the majority of my clients are women. And please, again, remind me of the second part of your question. I
Oh,
apologize.
just what qualities that are described on a more gender leaning. So often the intuition is given, women do
Yes.
that, and problem solving is a guy thing.
Yeah, so I will love to actually shed more on that. So I've always been labeled that I have more of the male dominated characteristics, if you will. But to know a little bit about my background, I've been on my own since I was 16 years old. So unfortunately, my family passed away within a 7-year time period. And although I have a niece, I'm technically an only child. She is the daughter of two best friends that I've had for over 25 years. But I've been on my own since I was 16. And so as a result, there are a lot of those qualities that I frankly needed to adopt. And it's hard to shift out of that when I've spent more than half my life already in this space. And again, the intuition and the discernment happen later in life because I spent so much of the first half of my life in more of a survival mode, needing to make sure that the salary was going to be there, the job opportunity was going to be there, the literal roof over my head was going to be there. And now, once I was in my mid-30s and then early 40s, it has allowed me to soften and to listen to those quieter things that I didn't always have the chance to listen to before.
Confidence, I'm just going to go slightly left here. Sorry, I go left and my arms go right. I'm so glad this isn't a video podcast. Confidence and visibility come up for midlife women a lot. Now, you're not quite midlife, but what changed for you when you gave yourself permission to be seen and paid, because you just talked about that, at the level of your, I don't know if I say experience or expertise?
I think probably a combination of both. I think visibility and with the women that I work with, that is a challenge for them much more than the men that I've worked with before. And there's all of these reasons that we understand why that comes into play. However, it really is an essential quality to be able to have that visibility because truly behind visibility is recognition. And I think that is the purpose. It's not visible for the sake of becoming an influencer or dancing on a social media app, but truly it's visibility as a means to an end, which is to get that recognition for your work, for your expertise, for your skill set. And so that's why I think we have to work through those mindset blocks as to what is preventing us from getting to that visibility stage, because confidence can be manufactured, honestly. I've gone up on stages before, and I don't ever want to see a video or a photo of me on the stage, but when I'm speaking, I'm very present. I'm very present with the audience. But as soon as I come off that stage and I'm back on the ground, I don't want to see any of that. And so for me, people would say, well, is that a confidence issue? It might be, but I also don't let it affect my job. And so my job is to serve whoever it is that has hired me and whoever is in the audience that I hope to touch with my message. And so that's where I say confidence isn't mandatory, but visibility to me is mandatory.
Our listeners can't see, but if you see me sort of grinning wildly as you're talking, it's just because it's like, yeah, that was me like 20, 30 years ago, whatever it was. So it's kind of funny. Now we're talking about women who might feel the pull towards something new. They hesitate to claim it. And you just almost touched on this, but what's the most common mindset shift you see that unlocks that forward movement?
There's so many, specifically when it comes to visibility. The two that come up the most are what are people going to think about me? And so, if we think about that one, what are other people going to think about me? I would ask, what do you think about you? And that is a question that I've also asked myself. And the reason I ask that, and it is a confronting question of what do you think about you, is because it's so easy for us to put ourselves in the back seat to some hypothetical crowd that may or may not think something of us that we have conjured in our head and said it is true. And that is a very real thing. So I think diagnosing that and teasing out what is the thought versus what are the facts. So that's very meaningful to be able to do that. And so that question of what are people going to think, really, I want you to ask yourself, what will you think if you decide to do it? What will you think if you don't decide to do it? And if you feel that the answer is regret or remorse or anger or bitterness or any of those things from not doing it, then I think the pull is you should probably at least try it. So that's the first thing. The second thing when it comes to visibility is this idea of, will people take me seriously? And this to me is reps. It's honestly repetition. Will people take me seriously? The more you do something, the more skilled you are, the more adept you are at speaking about it. So all of those things just happen through repetition. And unfortunately, we have to do that. If we're going to learn how to swim, we have to get into the pool. We have to try it and fail a bunch of times and learn how to put our face in the water and breathe and then do this stroke to the next stroke. And I feel it's very similar to that as well. People will take you seriously, one, as far as you take yourself seriously. And then also, as you explain it, as people, as you start to get more comfortable in what it is that you're doing, that excitement's going to come with you. The expertise, the being able to connect the dots for other people or show them something that they want or sell them a service or a product or a baked good or whatever that is, it will start to excite you, that connection piece. But those are the two things that often stop people, and they hide it around the question of, I don't know where to start. But truly, I don't believe in this day and age where we have computers and phones and everything that can literally answer the question of where we start. It's never really about that. It's usually one of those two questions that I say.
A number of years ago, I wrote an article on success versus failure. And I talked about something that I started that I was so excited about. And just because of circumstance, I had to stop doing that. And I was really clear of the fact that I hadn't failed, I just couldn't succeed. And really def making that
Right.
the dis like the What's the difference? Explaining the difference between success and failure and how it's not black and white. It's not either or. Because you try
Right.
something and it doesn't work, it's not that you tried it and you failed. It's or not
Right.
necessarily that you tried it and you failed, but you tried it for whatever reasons, chose to not continue. And so that's not a failure. In some ways, it's a success of its own because it's a
Yeah.
decision to discontinue.
Absolutely. I think also we can think about that even with relationships and marriages. Is it a failure if your marriage, and of course, the goal is you want to stay married for the rest of your lives. However, if you have a beautiful marriage and you have children and you have beautiful memories together, and then something happened in those last few years, I still think we can't discount all of the beautiful years that preceded that because that was a success. And I think also when it comes to career, we could have had a great time at our organization for the first 10 or 15 years there. And then maybe in the last one or two, or maybe there was a layoff that impacted you. I don't think it means that the entire piece, to your point, and I agree with you, is that it was a failure. I think it was successful. And then the chapter closed, and then it was time to open up a new book. And that's how I like to think about it as well. Because if not, if we think of everything that didn't last as a failure, oh, the pain that's going to live inside of our bodies, just thinking about that, and the way that it is going to prevent us from trying something new because of the way that we're thinking about something that was. That's the piece where it breaks my heart to think about that. So if we can reframe those pieces as how are they successful and write it down, how are they successful? We had great relationships, we had great love, we traveled the world, or I was promoted, I have great working relationships still with coworkers, whatever those things are, find the good pieces and then let that help fuel you as you go into your next venture. Because if not, you will stay in a loop of indecision and fear.
Well, and I think bringing it back to you and me, if you and I were to decide next month to discontinue our podcasts, now this many years
Right.
in, we can't say that it was a failure, obviously not. But even if either
Absolutely.
one of us had made that decision within the first year, what, and maybe it was a failure in terms of nobody was listening, nobody was, paying attention. You still walk away with so many skills that it's like, yeah, that didn't work, but I've got all these skills. So, like, there's still successes in the midst of what you might call a failure.
Absolutely. I felt as if if you've ever had a Christmas tree and you've gone in and the string of lights and there's one bulb that you can't find, but the string of lights is no longer working. And I thought that I felt very similar to the Christmas tree. It was one bulb at a time. And it wasn't until I started to teach myself the new skill set and move into podcasting that I felt as if I was lighting myself back up again. And I didn't realize how just one bulb at a time was really having a bigger impact, which is why my friend shared, "Oh, you sound as if you're disconnected from your body." I hadn't realized it at the time, but she had seen those Christmas lights go out in me. And so that's why, to the point, if you stop doing something, the people that we've been able to meet when we've interviewed folks, the skills that we've been able to learn, the great time, even editing an episode, all of those things of, I just feel there's so much that we achieve and there's so much that we gain from doing that, that it can't possibly be a failure.
Let me just flash this up for 2 seconds because it's really fast. You are going to be episode 325 of my podcast. And I shouldn't say you're
Love
going to be, you are. So when you talk
it.
about all the people, it's like, oh my goodness, it's just been, I think there's only one person out of 325 that I struggled to bring out and to talk to. So it's, yeah, it's just so okay. We're selling podcasts now. What haven't we talked about, though, that you want mid-age women to think about as they listen to this conversation or after listening to this conversation?
The biggest thing that I can share with everyone is I am so bullish on the idea of having a personal brand. And I know that we think that personal brands are relegated towards companies or even for, again, those that are on TikTok and these other social media apps. But I think having a personal brand simply goes down to this: what do you want to be known for? And as you're thinking about either continuing your current venture, starting something new, answering that question of what do you want to be known for is the quintessential piece of building your personal brand, because it will propel you in rooms that you're not even in. That means that Agnes can remember what that thing is you want to be known for. And when she speaks to an upcoming guest or a past guest, say, "I'd love to connect the two of you." So having a personal brand, to me, doesn't have an expiration date. It's so much more forward thinking than what our resumes show. This is historical piece of paper, but our personal brand really signals to people, what is it that I want to do? And the great thing about it is that you get to shape it. It's not decided by anyone else. No one else has fingerprints on it, but you get to determine what you want to look like in this stage of your life. And to me, that is one of the most freeing things to be able to do. And so I would suggest to anyone listening, if you're even considering the idea of trying something new or going out on your own, build that personal brand, because we all have one. It's just, are you determining what that is? Or if someone else is determining it for you.
And I'm going to add that, when you talk about a personal brand, often people do think big. When you think about some of the big, huge, famous people out there and what that brand is. But if somebody wants to do something, even like, I don't know, create knitting patterns and sell the package, including all the yarn, then
Absolutely.
their personal brand is, you've got a knitting problem? Oh my goodness, go see this person because she knows
Yes.
everything about knitting, that sort of thing. So it doesn't have to be huge scale. It can be something small, very niche.
Absolutely. Yeah. So most people think I need to be Brené Brown or I need to be Mel Robbins or Oprah. Those are huge global personal brands, and that's fantastic for them. I am trying to serve in my small corner of the world. I don't have aspirations. So there's a marketer named Seth Godin. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him. And he says, 99% of the world doesn't know me, and I'm not interested in making it 98%. And I think that is so beautiful to think about that. He wants to serve his group of people really well, and he's completely fine with that. And I think if we think about our own personal brands in that way, it makes it so much easier for us to go forward and just manage that idea, because it's simply, what do you want to be known for? And it can be to your community. It does not have to be on a global scale. And I really love the idea, again, of us being able to shape what we want that to be and have it not be shaped from someone else.
It's almost a nice way to end, but I'm not going to. Tell us about the Authority Accelerator.
Yeah, so the authority accelerator, if you struggle with thinking, what is that going to look like for me? What are some of those qualities that I've even forgotten? So often we don't really take an assessment of ourselves quite frequently. And it's an opportunity for you to take a step back and to think about what are some of your skills, the expertise you have, and also your trajectory. Where do you want to go next? And it starts to give you a blueprint of some of the options that you have available to you. And you get to decide, okay, what lights me up here? What would be interesting for me to try to do? And then once you have that, it helps you figure out how to talk about it to other people. So you can start building those reps that we had shared about earlier, so it feels more comfortable. So it's about giving you this playbook so you can signal out to the universe, hey, I'm open for business and I'm thinking about my life in this way. And again, when I say that, it's just the business of whatever you want it to be, whether it's a hobby, a meetup for quite some time. I had a run club, I had 2,000 members in the run club. I did not run. I think it's important to note that I was never a runner, but I wanted to do something that was outside. I wanted to get into running and meet people. And that was, people knew me in my community as the woman who has the run club. So it doesn't have to always be going towards a business, but it does allow you to do a lot of fun things as well. And the Authority Accelerator will help get you there.
There was something that you just explained there that, like, I guess where you want to be. And at this stage of the game, if at age 70 I want to do something just for the next 5 years, then that's okay. That's a finite amount of time. If I say, oh, to hell with this noise, I'm healthy, I'm going to go till I'm 95, then and so be it. So at this age, it's not like you, oh, I don't have the energy to go to, like another 30-year career. It doesn't have to be that. It can be a couple of years. It can be till you find something else. It can be, and I guess there too, you can keep on reinventing yourself every few years if you so choose.
Absolutely. The run club, to everything we talked about, it was a success until I closed it down about 3.5 years in. It was great. It brought community together. People were married that met at the run club that hadn't known each other. Others met best friends and they'd taken road trips around the country. So it was a beautiful experience. But I knew I wasn't going to do the run club forever. It was for a moment in time. And I felt very complete with that. So to your point, it doesn't have to be anything that's going to last in this incredible duration. You get to decide what you want that to look like. And then once you have the skills to create that personal brand, you can recreate it. You can pivot for the next thing you do, or you can decide, I don't want to be known as anything anymore. And I'm just going to go back and I've given this a shot and I don't want to do it. But it's a really beautiful thing. And I tell people, just start with the next 6 to 12 months. Let's just look at that. We don't have to look any further beyond that because you give yourself a time to explore and to be curious and not the pressure of this has to work because this is what I've committed to doing for the next 5 or 10 years. Just give yourself 6 months and see how it feels.
There we go. Where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
You can find me at youwannadowhat.com, which is not very SEO friendly, but at the time I wasn't thinking about SEO. So it is youwanna, WANNA, dowhat.com. And you can find me by that name on all socials if social is one of the things that grab you. And I would be delighted if you want to grab that authority accelerator to help support you. It'll have my email. Please reach out if you have any questions. And let's have more women out here with personal brands and really stepping into whatever they want to do next with
I
confidence.
am listening to you. I'm checking my other monitor. Where do we find your socials?
So Instagram and TikTok is that you want to do
Okay.
what? And my website is youwannadowhat.com.
Okay. The website will be in the, well, actually all the links, but that's where I was going. Like, okay, can somebody just go to the website and find all the socials? But that's all right.
Yes, they can.
Can I ask you a personal question before we close?
Of course. Yes,
I tried to
absolutely.
find this a second time and I couldn't, but somewhere in doing my research on you, I found the phrase fun TT. You want to be fun TT. Now, I love the term. In
Yes.
my younger days, I also worked at being that. Tell our listeners what that means and how it's happening in your life. You've already made a few little references.
Yeah, so the fun Titi is in Puerto Rico. That's what we call aunt. So I'm the fun aunt to my 8-year-old niece, and she is the light of my life. She's my small, broke best friend, but I absolutely adore her. And we have really the best time together. And I would say, of all the commas I have, there is not, none is more special to me than to be the fun Titi with her. So, I carry her with me everywhere. I try to bring her to every talk that I have, and not physically there, but in my talks, I will always mention her. I hope that she's able to look back at all of the snippets that exist of me online and know that she was always considered and always remembered. So she means the world to me.
And it's sort of a fun place to be. As I say, when I was much younger before my time got taken up by my own kids, but that relationship lasts. My
It
nieces and my
does.
nephew now are all well into their 40s, and there's still big hugs, and just it's so nice to just still get together. And my
It's really
yeah yeah
beautiful.
and my big thing now is being a fun abuela, so.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's, as I say, it's one of the best things. And she teaches me so much. And I try to teach her as much as I can as well. But it's also about connecting with her and doing the things that she enjoys. So whether that's getting on the floor or making silly sounds or listening to music artists I would never normally listen to. Then that's what we do, and we enjoy it. And I try to keep it fun for her, and she keeps it fun for me. So thank you for letting me speak
No,
about
it
her. She'll be so happy when she
it
hears
was
this.
just so fun looking through, and then I don't know where I saw a fun Titi, and I just went, oh man, okay. This is
It's
Tia Monica, so this is good fun.
the
And once again, given the fact that mine are much older now, if there's ever an issue that she can't go to her parents about, it's you that she's going to call. So that relationship is just so valuable.
Absolutely. I will say, without disclosing, she did share with me about a year ago something had happened in school. And I was not prepared, Agnes, for what she was about to tell me. And she shared the news. And I remember thinking, don't make a face, just act as if everything is fine. And in my head, I'm thinking, how do I problem solve this? I've never encountered this before. So I'm listening to her, but my wheels were spinning. And I thought, I need to have the best response that I can for her in this moment. Because I can't say, can you give me a minute? Because she's young and she wants an answer at the time. But she challenges me in the best ways. But I also deeply appreciate that she did want to share it with me. And she wasn't comfortable yet telling her parents because she was still trying to figure out what it meant at school and all of those things. And so to have that relationship and just be a safe space for littles, I think is so important. They need that. They do
Thank
need
you
that.
for telling us
Yeah.
about her. That's great.
Of course.
Okay,
Thank
as I
you.
just mentioned, your website link is in the show notes. All of your links are on your
Yes.
page at our website. Listeners, as you're listening, I'd love to hear from you. What's one piece of experience you're starting to see differently after this conversation? There's a leading question for you. Share your thoughts in the comments or at the website. If you know a woman who's questioning her next chapter or quietly underestimating her value, did you hear my voice go serious when I added that part in? Please share this episode with her. Sometimes one conversation is exactly the nudge we need. Reminder to check out the resource tab at boomwithabang.com. It's growing, expanding as there's more that you ask about. Monica Rivera, thank you so much for being my guest today and for reminding us that our next chapter isn't about erasing the past, but finally honoring it. It's just so important. I appreciate the
Absolutely.
clarity, your generosity, and the perspective you shared with us. It was so great. It just made for such an easy conversation. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Agnes, and you sharing that I'm episode 325. So March 25th has a significance in my life. So I really love that episode 325. So thank you so much. And it has been my absolute delight. And I do hope if any of the listeners are here and they have questions, I say this with all of the meaning, please reach out to me. I'm happy to support.
And I'm not sure if we emphasize that enough, but if you go to listeners, if you go to the website right at the top, download the Authority Accelerator for free. So that's right at the very top of Monica's website. So have a great rest of week.
Thank you so much, you too.